Yes, it has been a month since we've met for Tiltul Min Hatzad. In which case, I think it's relevant that we may be up for a review. So we'll do some Chazara tonight. You can use the pages that you've used in the past for this paper. If you don't have it, it's okay. You have to fish it out of your chametz. Fish it out of your chametz cabin. Everyone's houses are upside down. Yeah, so it goes the day after Pesach. But we will summarize colloquially, paraphrasing and using it without the inside text. But we'll go a little step by step, a little step by step. Okay, what are we talking about? Tiltul. Maybe I should take the board away. Tiltul Min Hatzad. Tiltul Min Hatzad. And as we'll see, the definition or the meaning of Tiltul Min Hatzad will shift and change depending on how you make all these gemaras work together. What are beautiful things, to me beautiful, about gemara learning is, as we've seen in other sugyas too, but as we've seen specifically in this sugya, is that you put all the puzzle pieces together. And it's our job to understand the Rishonim's understanding of how they all work together. You can imagine it, you know, if we're going to make some kind of mashal here, that you've got a bunch of pieces, and the question is, how are you going to chisel all the pieces so that they all fit with each other? And different Rishonim take different angles, different approaches to, you know, how to chisel those pieces to, you know, to make them all fit together. And different Rishonim will then also say, wait a second, you missed the spot, you know, that doesn't fit. And then we'll see, through this proverbial kaleidoscope of opinions, we'll see first if one wins out, right? If one way of making the puzzle pieces work together is the one that we ultimately follow, and that's the one that makes the Shulchan Aruch. Or maybe we'll see how we have some kind of fusion of different opinions that makes it into the Shulchan Aruch. Or what often happens is you'll find one opinion in the Shulchan Aruch and another one in the Ramah and another one in the Mishnah Berurah, and we'll basically just machmer for the most stringent opinion. That happens a lot too. So as we'll see, we will sort of paint this picture or put these puzzle pieces together to make it all work. And the beauty of the sugya that we have is it seems like it doesn't work at all. And that's where it really becomes beautiful. Because you and I look at these Gemaras and say, these things have there's no way you can reconcile these Gemaras. They have nothing in common. They're saying the opposite. And then you look at Tosfos, and then you look at the Rush, you look at the Riff, you look at the Balamor, you look at all the Rishonim that attack it and say, no, we can make this work. And you're like, wow, I can't believe we did that. You know, it's sort of like you sit back and you just understand the beauty of Torah and the beauty of the Rishonim and the rabbis who are able to hold all of these Gemaras at the same time. They're able to juggle them and make them all work together. So this is a beautiful way, a beautiful example of that. And really, almost every sugya has that in its own ways. But here you have a more explicit example of it. So rewinding a little bit. We had a couple Gemaras that we started with. We have, I believe, Kuf Mem Aleph, Kuf Mem Zayin, Kuf Mem Aleph, Kuf Chaf Gimel. Kuf Chaf Gimel, is that correct? I think Kuf Mem Zayin was Basis. I'm getting my Gemaras mixed up. Yeah, definitely not Kuf Mem Zayin. Kuf Chaf Gimel might have been the Fig Gemara. Let's see, Kuf Chaf Gimel. It was the Muktzah Gemara, yeah. That was the bread and fig Gemara. Kuf Mem Aleph was the radish Gemara. And then we had, what was it? Mem Gimel Amid Beis. There you go. The board is good for something. Mem Gimel Amid Beis was the dead body Gemara. Okay, so we had these three Gemaras. And the truth is, there were other Gemaras. Anyone remember the other ones we mentioned? We learned them before, which is why they're important. the stone on top of the barrel, right? That was another one. Now, that Gemara, the reason why we didn't learn that Gemara inside this time around, we learned it for Bas Stavar Aser, the reason why we didn't learn it this time around is because it doesn't explicitly talk about Tiltum and Tzad. That's just what's going on, right? If you can't, you know, if you can't take it off because you left it there on purpose, so then you can still shake it off. But shaking off, that's Tiltum and Tzad, right? And the other example that's brought up in the Poskim, which is actually connected to our Gemara, is the Mishnah on Kuf Mem Aleph, which talks about the straw. I'm going to have to clarify something about that straw case. But we'll get there when we get there. Yeah, the straw on the bed. The straw on the bed. Not the straw on the fig. Very good. Not the straw on the fig. That's Kuf Chav Gimel. Okay, so we've got these three Gemaras. Now, we started in a way that made us very comfortable. We started on Gemara's Kuf Chav Gimel and Kuf Mem Aleph. The Gemara is talking about the straw on the bed, really the Mishnah, which then led to the fig, which then led to the radish. We talked about Kuf Chav Gimel, which was the bread and the fig. And basically what we came out with was, in more ways than one, that we paskin tiltum en atzad lo shmei tiltul. That indirect movement is not movement at all. And therefore, if you ever wanted to move something on Shabbos, just use your elbow. You can do whatever you want, just don't use your hands. That's basically what we fought, what we saw, what we finalized.
Is that different than saying do it with a shino?
That is, a shino has to do more with malacha. Tiltul muktzah, you could use a shinoi, but it's because it's tiltum en atzad, not because it's a shinoi. Shinoi is basically doing a malacha in a way which is not its
normal
original normal use or original activity.
Is the purpose really just to remind yourself that you shouldn't be really be doing it? But you
what, a shinoi?
Yeah.
It could be like that, but it's also because it takes it away from being biblical. Let's assume for now, just for the sake of answering your question, it's more complicated than this. Let's just assume that all malachos, all of the forbidden activities of Shabbos, are dictated strictly, literally, based on what they did in the Mishkan.
Right.
So and how they did it in the Mishkan.
So everything we are forbidden to do is a derivative of that. It's not like
not a derivative, a mimicking.
Or mimicking.
Exactly the way that they did it. My point being, if you deviate from the exact activity that they did, it's no longer a biblical prohibition. It's still rabbinic because you're effectuating the same, you know, cooking with your left hand is still cooking. Yeah. But, well, I guess cooking with your left hand is not really part of the actual Isser. But the point is, writing with your left hand is still writing. So the rabbis will say that's Isser. But it's not the way that it was done in the Mishkan. Only the righties ever wrote. No, I'm kidding. But the people wrote with their strong hands in the Mishkan. That's how they did it. So if you don't do it with your strong hand, it is not a biblical violation of writing. It's still a violation of Midrabanan. So there are more aspects of Shinoi. Tiltum and Atzad is different. Tiltum and Atzad is not because it's a Shinoi. We're not taking it away from its original, you know, technicality of how the thing should be moved. We're just talking about whether or not, when we go back to the original purpose of Muktzah, the original purpose of Muktzah is to create an atmosphere of Shabbos, which is different than a weekday. Right? There are different ways we said it, but and if you were to move things with your hands, you'd be doing things like you do on a weekday. But now that you're doing it indirectly, so you're still maintaining Shabbos is different, that kind of thing. Okay, just to sort of wrap it all together. We don't have to necessarily keep that sort of ultimate focus, but that is one way you could look at it. I had in the past 4 or 5 weeks since we met last, I had an interesting quick conversation with someone who once heard a Dvar Halacha that I was saying. And they said to me, you know, it was very interesting. I went home and I spoke to my family about it. And I, you know, they said it in this sort of like way of making it less critical. They said, we discussed whether focusing on all the details lost the bigger picture. That's how they said it. Basically meaning, like, why are you so worried about the little things? You know, just think about God and think about spirituality and just don't lose the big picture. And that is true if the purpose is self-serving. If the purpose of halacha is not because we're trying to experience some lofty, feeling, so then yeah, it depends how you feel about it. But if your whole purpose in keeping halacha is because you're trying to do the best that you can for Hashem, the creator of the world, so then you're going to do everything you can. You know, think about it in the realm of a spouse. You know, if the whole purpose is, you know, I want to make sure that I feel like I'm doing something good for my spouse. So then you'll get your spouse your favorite food, not their favorite food, right? But if the whole purpose is I want to do something because this is what, I want to do something for my spouse, so then the details are the most important part, right? The details is what shows you that, shows your spouse that you care, right? So you, when you see, look at it like that, it's a very different experience. Halacha is very different. So that's what we're doing here. We're delving into the details because we want to understand exactly the best way that we can serve Hashem. All right, that's the greater picture. That's the greater picture that we're really dealing with. And especially when it comes to Torah learning, I guess as another means of introduction as we review and get ourselves back into this. So think about it, you know, this is not a mashal that I can relate to. Maybe, you know, in a generation before technology when you were, you know, being courted or courting your significant other, so then maybe you experience this a little bit more. If you're in love with a person, this is what I just know from the movies. No, I don't remember any movie like this, but when you get a love letter, you know, when you get a love letter, what do? When you get a love letter from your, you know, your boyfriend or girlfriend, you analyze every single little thing. What did they mean by this? Why did they write it that way? How did they dot their I's and cross their T's? That's halacha. That's, you know, we are interpreting the love letter that is the Torah. And that's why we're analyzing it, because we want to know exactly what Hashem said to us. Nowadays, people in my generation don't appreciate that. No. Maybe innuendos of text messages, but those are much more lethal. Those innuendos are, you know, are really terrible. And my mother was just talking about how she found her father's love letters to her mother. Aww. In her mother's stuff. And it was... whatever, she was very into it. I don't have any of those. We have text messages. Either way. Oh yeah, they're very interesting to look at. It was a way of, you know, but that's what we're doing here, right? That's what we're doing. You might not see that in the world view, but that's how you can see. We're trying to understand when Hashem says keep Shabbos, when He says to create an atmosphere of Shabbos, rest on Shabbos. That includes not moving things in the way you do on a weekday. So that's what we're trying to figure. What does it mean to keep that environment of Shabbos? What does Hashem want from us on Shabbos? Okay, so here we are trying to create those delineations to hone in on how to best chisel out these puzzle pieces to make it all work together. So we started, as I said before, in that comfortable way. Tiltel menatzah is fine. Lash me tiltel. That's what you get from the radish, from the bread, from the straw in the bed. The radish, the bread, the straw in the bed. I feel like I'm doing a nursery rhyme. But that's what you get. That's the picture you get from Kuf Chav Gimel and Kuf Mem Aleph. Then we threw a big wrench into the whole equation. And now this wrench was not just big, was not just an exception because it disagreed, but it's an exception because of the language of the Gemara. If you remember the language of the Gemara that dealt on Mem Gimel Amud Beis, the language of the Gemara that dealt with the dead body, the language of the Gemara was, at the end of the Gemara was, and I'll just quote this one line and hopefully you'll forgive me because you might not have it in front of you. The language was, Kule Alma. Kule Alma. What is Kule Alma? The whole world. Kol Ha'olam. Right, not Gesher Tarmod, but Kol Ha'olam believes Tiltul Min Hatzad Shmei Tiltul. That indirect tiltul, indirect movement of a mukta item is real movement of muktzah item. Now,
in the case of the dead body. Right.
And the reason why we were allowed to move the dead body was there was a fire. If you remember, it wasn't just a dead body. There was a fire, and you had to, right? It was a bad day, exactly.
Or it was deteriorating in the hot sun or something.
Well, that's how we started. We brought up the case of the fire to try to explain that case. And there's a whole machlokas in Rishonim. How do you relate it back to the beginning of the Gemara? We're not going to get there right now. But the point is that language was the most challenging for us. It would be one thing if the Gemara brought an opinion that said, Tiltul Midatzad Shmei Tiltul, and then just didn't bring up another opinion. That would be challenging enough, because then we have to figure out which Gemara do we pass on like. Do we pass on like Kuf, Do we pass like Mem Gimel Amid Beis or Kuf Chav Gimel and Kuf Mem Aleph? We'd have to figure it out. And that's what posts can do. I mean, the Rishonim can basically say, oh, we don't pass like this Gemara, we pass like that Gemara. The problem is the language here is so specific. The language is Kulei Alma. The entire world, whether you're on Daf Beis, Gimel, Dalet, Hey, Vav, Zayin, Ches, Tes, Mem, Gimel, Amid Beis, Kuf, Chav, Gimel, or Kuf, Mem, Aleph, the whole world believes. All the people on all those Gemaras believe. Tiltum and Atzad, Shmei Tiltum. That indirect movement of a Muktzah object is real movement of a Muktzah object. And you can't just go around all Shabbos moving your money. You can't do that indirectly. You cannot do that. The question is, well, then what in the world are we going to do with those Gemaras later on? We just got done saying that you're allowed to move the straw, you're allowed to move the radish, you're allowed to move the bread, you're allowed to move the fig. So what gives? Why in those Gemaras did we say indirect movement was okay? And here on Mem Gimel, all of a sudden we're saying everybody believes you can't do it. What do you mean everybody believes? We've got four cases later on in the Masech that say you can do it. And one of the things you can't say is, oh, well, they didn't get to that part yet. No. All of this is just retroactive review for the Gemara, right? For Rav Ashi and Ravina, who are compiling all this stuff, they're just putting it in different places. They all had these conversations. They were having these, you know, discussions in the Beis Medrash. They were having these discussions around the dinner table all the time. So then the question we have to figure out is, how do you reconcile, how do you fit these puzzle pieces together? So most prominently, the three Gemaras that talk about the phrase Tiltum and Hatzad explicitly are the dead body, the bread slash radish, bread slash fig, and radish. Those are the three Gemaras that talk about Tiltum and Hatzad. Connected to those Gemaras is also the stone on the barrel and the straw on the bed. The straw on the bed is the Mishnah, which the Gemara comments on, so it's kind of more explicit. But those, it's not explicitly applied to the straw. So these three Gemaras, these two Gemaras, we've got to make them work. And you could say, well, we got five cases here. In four of them, we're okay. We're moving it. And in only one of them, we're not okay, the dead body. So why don't we just say, you know, Achrei Rabim Lahatos, next week's Parsha, you're going to follow the majority. It doesn't work like that. Especially when the Gemara uses this phrase. Everyone in the whole world, Kulei Alma, Tiltum and Atzad Shmei Tiltum. So now we got to figure it out. So we had already proposed a couple different answers. Some who believe that both of these answers are the same thing. We had number one, Tosfos, and number two, the Rif. Tosfos, in regards to the dead body Gemara, asks this question explicitly, I believe. Yeah. And he said, trying to find the words inside. The Omeri, the Yesh Lechalek. You can make a distinction between all of these cases. Dehacha, here, Ikar Hatiltul Letzorech Meis. Here, in the case of the dead body, the main tiltul is for the sake of the dead body. And when it's for the sake of a dead body, then we've got problems. If your intention is to move something which is usser, the dead body in this case is usser, it's the muktzah item that you're working for, that's when we've got problems. That's when tiltum and atzad, shmei tiltul, that's when you're not allowed to move it. However, v'lo damil kohano she'osa ikar hatiltul litzarech kar v'chavis v'lo litzarech ma'os v'aven. In those cases of the money on the pillow, which is the same as the, I think that's in the straw on the bed Gemara, was it? I meant Mishnah. But let me see for a second. No, it was different. Maybe that's the Evan Gemara, the one with the rock on top. Yeah, it was the rock on top of the barrel is also set along with the money on top of the pillow. That's a Bus's Dover Usher question. Anyway, so he says in those cases you're not pushing off the rock or pushing off the money for the sake of the money. You're not putting the money somewhere. You're not putting the rock somewhere. You're trying to get to the wine inside the barrel. Or you're trying to use the pillow. Those are that's the purpose of it. Those are letzarech davar hamutter. So that's why it says Tosfos, that's why these Gemaras are really not talking to each other. Because they're really talking about two separate cases, and therefore it's not a problem at all. So that's how Tosfos explained it. I believe we looked at the Rush, right?
Yeah.
The Rush was a little more involved. I was going to say the Riff first. Let's do the Riff first. The truth is, we should have done the Riff first because the Riff came first. The Riff, Rav Yitzhak Alfasi. So that's Tosfos. You see this on the board here, source number one, or line number one here, that the dead body is a problem because it's Tzarech Davar Aser versus all the other four cases, the Tzarech Davar HaMutter. Yeah, there are other cases, but whatever. The Riff said a similar phrase, but not the same thing. Einu L'Tzarech Shabbos and L'Tzarech Shabbos. We debated what is the difference between these. Some people say it's the same thing. Some Rishonim say that Tosfos and the Riff mean the same thing. Something which is L'Tzarech Shabbos is a Davar HaMutter. And something which is not L'Tzarech Shabbos is Davar Aser. There are distinctions to be made, but we don't have to get into it now. I think probably most Rishonim disagree and say that Tosfos and the Riff are talking about two separate things, and you can find nafkaminas, meaning cases where one applies, it doesn't apply. As one chavrus of mine used to say, if there's no nafkamina, then the machlokas doesn't exist. If you can't find a case where one person would say differently than the other, so then they're agreeing. They might be saying different words, but they're agreeing. Okay, so there are nafkaminas between one and two. We're just summarizing here. And then we had the Rush. The Rush, this was a little more involved because the Rush really understands or interprets the Gemara about the dead body differently. It's more involved. Long story short, the Rush believes that the Gemara about the dead body was really not talking about Tiltum and Tzad. It shifted gears. It shifted gears and said, yes, Tiltum and Tzad is Aser, according to one opinion, but we're talking about an opinion that believes Tiltum and Tzad is Mutter, and in this case, it was a problem because you're not doing Tiltum and Tzad. Okay, I'm just saying that I'm not getting involved in how we got there. The point is that opinion that we're saying in the Gemara, Rabbi Yehuda ben Lakish, I think it is, that says you're allowed to move it because you're so tefloigen, right? You're worried about putting out the fire. So that was even to move it directly, you'd be allowed to do it. That's the opinion over there. So that's the Rush's opinion. Tosos, the Riff, and the Rush.
Without the fire, he wouldn't let you move the dead body.
According to the Rush, you would be allowed to move it Tiltum and Tzad.
Without the fire.
The Rush believes that the whole chiddush of Kuf Mem Aleph, of Mem Gimel, of the dead body Gemara, is to teach you that with a fire, you can move it directly.
But then
nobody else believes it that way.
Why does that? Then how can everyone agree that it's cool?
The Rush disagrees.
The whole world agrees that
Tiltum and Atzad is Aser. He would say, except for some people. Yeah. He would say that we don't pass on like that part. I don't know.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. I mean, if everyone, right, if the whole world agrees, then
yeah.
Why is
he... I'm not sure. We'd have to look back into the words of the Rush to figure out how he understands that phrase. So that's the Tosfos, the Riff, and the Rush. But I believe I introduced this last time also. We have a problem. We have a problem, and I believe Rabbeinu Yonah points it out. Maybe the Rush quotes Rabbeinu Yonah. Let me see if I can see it inside. I think I talked about it last time. And this is where I mentioned earlier, we've got to reinterpret the Gemara about the Mishnah about the straw. Explain to me what you believe, because I'm pretty sure this is how I explained it, what you believe to be the case of the straw on the bed. The Mishnah on Kuf Mem Aleph. Anyone remember it? To what? Say that again, Dina?
Tilt the pillow or tilt the bed
to get the straw off.
You could move it with your elbow to get it.
Oh, or else, yeah.
Move with the elbow?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I have two different things.
No, that's...
And
generally how I explained it. So it's okay. Nothing that... That is in the Mishnah. That is in the Mishnah.
All right.
But that's not... That makes it easier because the animal fodder, you're allowed to move animal food. We're talking about when it's not animal food and it's definitely mukta,
right. Yeah.
Then are you allowed to move it? I'm just trying to find the rush. I believe it's in Perek Gimel. Hold that thought. Hold that thought.
Okay.
That's going to be the problem. That I forced. That I brought upon you. I am taking it's chatai maskarayom. I take responsibility for misleading you in this, at least according to one opinion. So let me see for a second. Where is it in the rush? Okay. I'm looking for, I think he's supposed to quote another opinion. Yeah, here it is. The rush is Rabbeinu Asher ben Yechiel, the student of the Maharam Rutenberg. In the early 14th century, maybe the late 13th century. And he moved from Germany to Spain, right? Ashkenazi, famously, Ashkenazi to Sephardi land. I don't know exactly when he wrote the Rush, but he's about to quote a Sephardic rabbi, which is not uncommon. The Rush was a little later, so he had Rashi in front of him. He had a Rambam in front of him, presumably. And he's about to quote Rabbeinu Yonah. Anyone know Rabbeinu Yonah? Rabbeinu Yonah of Gurundi or Gerona, depending what language you're speaking. I don't know what's what. I just know there's multiple ways of saying it. And what?
Spain?
Yeah, it's in Spain. It's in Spain. I don't know how to say the name of the city, but it's in Spain. And I believe he was the cousin of the Ramban. They were related. Maybe he was a brother-in-law or something. I can't remember. Either way, Rabbeinu Yonah came maybe 100 years before the Rush. So he's about to quote Rabbeinu Yonah. We don't have this Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah was... He has a couple things. We have a couple commentaries from him, but we don't really have a lot. And I can't tell you that this is what happened, but it is interesting to note that Rabbeinu Yonah famously felt bad about joining forces with people who were opposed to the Rambam, right? Famously, he set out to go to the Rambam's grave to ask for forgiveness with a minion of men. He never made it. He also happened to have written something called the Shari Tshuva, which people think he wrote because of that. The truth is, it's part of a much bigger book. But the point is, the point that I was getting to is that Rabbeinu Yonah says at some point there was a book burning of the Gemara in Paris. And Rabbeinu Yonah, I think, said something along, and this precipitated his guilt, his need to go apologize to the Rambam. He said that it was indirect reimbursement for his speaking out against the Rambam. He took that upon himself. That he thought that the reason why the secular authorities took a stance, such a strong stance against this book is because he took such a strong stance against that book. I don't think he was the ringleader against the Rambam. There's another character, I think his name is Rav Shlomo ben Minahar, Tosafist, if I remember correctly. That was like a stronger opposition opponent to the Rambam. But either way, he felt really guilty about it. My point is to say, we don't have some commentaries from Rabbeinu Yonah that clearly existed. Who knows if they might have been involved in that, you know, dismissal of books. I don't know. But here's the rush quoting Rabbeinu Yonah we don't have.
When he went to apologize, did he daven something?
He was going to. I don't think he made it.
But what was he planning to do?
I don't know. Maybe to heal him. He was going to publicly say he was sorry. Publicly meeting with a minion of men. He was going to say that I hereby
Was he bringing the minion?
Trying to be Jewish.
Going to choose
the local minion? I don't know. I'd have to research. I don't remember. Either way, I think we did a Legends and Lessons on him a few years ago. So he quotes Rabbeinu Yonah. V'hiksha al zeh harav Rabbeinu Yonah. Mehadit nan al kaman beperek tolin. That's kuf mem aleph amid aleph. Hakasha agabe hamitza. That's the straw on the bed. Lo yina aneu biyado. You should not shake it off with your hands. Ava mina aneo begufo. You can do so with your body. V'daiki mine beirav de tiltum minatzav lo shme tiltul. And we learn from there, the base medrash of Rav learned from there, as we know, this is not any chiddush to us, learn from there that indirect movement is not movement, right? V'hasam says Rabbeinu Yonah, and we're going to have to sort of backtrack after I say this, V'hasam l'tzorech hakash shehu muktza hu metaltel. L'tzorech hakash shehu muktza hu metaltel. This is Rabbeinu Yonah asking a question on Tosfos. Tosfos had said, when are you allowed to have indirect movement? When it's for the mutter item. Now, how did we apply that to the bed case? The bed is a mutter item. That is apparently not what the Mishnah means. We understood with our 21st century brains, I understood with my 21st century brain, that there was schmutz on the bed. The bed is made of straw. The bed is made of straw. The problem is that it's lumpy, apparently. So I look back at Rashi on that Mishnah.
You're smoothing something out.
Correct. Well, it's not smoothing because it's not a hard surface like that. I know where you're going with that. It's not a problem. No. These are separate pieces of straw. They're not one block. You're just trying to cause more problems. So Rashi on that Gemara, on that Mishnah says, Ustama lahasaka, the straw was designated for burning. Uba lishkav alav. The words of Rashi, the person comes to sleep on it. Now you and I would, what's it? The bed. Lishkav alav is referring to the pieces of straw. Maybe it would be more grammatically correct to say on them. You could say on the mass of straw as the singular unit, alav, on it, the mass of straw. But if he would have said aleihem, it would have been obvious for us. He's talking about the straw. But he says alav. Alav could either be referring to the bed or the straw. We interpret it to be the bed because we have 21st century brains. Umenaneo kidei sheheitzaf verach lishkav. And the next part is he shakes it off or shakes it in order for it to be smooth and soft to sleep. Which we, again, interpreted to mean, you don't want any straw on your bed. That would be uncomfortable. That's not what it means. It means it was lumpy, and he was trying to smoothen out the straw. So says Rabbeinu Yonah, now we've got a problem, right? Because Tosos came up with a beautiful shtickle. Really nice, Tosos. Only one problem. It's against an explicit Mishnah. Which, by the way, is a big problem. Because, not just because it's against something, the Mishnah doesn't have anyone who disagrees with it. Right, when the Mishnah says, when Yehuda Nasi records this statement in the Mishnah, nobody disagrees. There's no opposition to that phrase. Everyone agrees you are allowed to move the straw with your body. The question is why. So when Tosfos comes along and says that it's the Torah Tavar Mutter, wait a second, no it's not. Rashi interprets the Mishnah, and the Mishnah itself, almost by definition, says this is a Devar Aser. Because then it says, as Bashi reminded us, if it's animal food, that's not a problem at all. You can move it directly. Which means the first part is when it's not mutter. The first part is when it's a problem. It's muktzah, straw. So everyone agrees that the straw in that Mishnah is a Devar Aser. And Tosfos just conveniently didn't mention it when he said his opinion on Daf Mem Gimel Amid Beis, which at that point it was on Mem Dal, it goes over the next page.
I'm not asking why the straw is a Devar Aser. No, it's
according to Rashi, the words of Rashi, it was because it was designated for fuel.
And you're using it for another purpose.
You're using it for your bed. So that is, now that we understand what the Mishnah is talking about, we are now interpreting that Mishnah to be, Tiltul min hatzad litzarach davar ha'aser.
Is this allowed?
The Mishnah seems to say it's okay.
Right.
Nobody seems to disagree with it. So that's Rabbeinu Yonah's question on Tosos. How could you say that the distinction is what the purpose is? For the mutter item or the aser item, that's clearly for the aser item, and you're allowed to. Not clearly, we didn't get it. But it's for the aser item, and it's clearly allowed. So that, well, that was the case. That was the question. The Rush quotes from Rabbeinu Yonah.
Can't something be two? Can't it be, it's an aser item if you're going to burn it, but it's a mutter item if you're going to sleep on it? I mean, can't it have... Right?
We talked about multiple uses, and we said that it depends, but if there is some kind of designated mutter purpose, so then you'd be allowed to move it. Mm-hmm. As long as it's designated for something that you're going to do on Shabbos, even if it could be used for something else, yeah. that's not a problem.
So even though it was designated...
It has to be exclusively set aside.
Okay.
Right? Because we possibly grab a Shimon, right?
Okay.
Default, if it's good for something, it's good for anything. You can move it. It's designated for a mutter purpose.
The only time
that it's a problem is if it's exclusively set for something else.
Okay.
Right? And nobody should touch it. So, here comes the huge chiddush. Anyone have an answer to that question? Right? We got this huge puzzle piece that's bumping into the other puzzle pieces. How does this work? Huge chiddush from Rabbeinu Yonah. That's the kind of chiddush that will throw such a big wrench into the sugya that it will change. It has to, by almost, you know, there's no choice. That it has to change how we paskin the halacha. Okay? Listen to this one. This is like the opposite of the rush, which I'm not going to explain. He says, v'lo kasha. But in the end, it's not a problem. Phew, not a problem. But why not? Just read here. Oh, there's another text which actually makes it easier. Dehasam, in the case of the straw on the bed, af tiltol min hatzad ein kan. Even indirect movement is not here. There's not even a... Or you're scratching your head. What do you mean? We've got straw on the bed, and you're clearly moving it with your body. So what are we talking about? Dehasam, af tiltol ein kan. Kimo, was there another kind? Was there another situation? Anyone remember where there was what seemed like tiltul min hatzad that we reinterpreted to say, "Oh, it's not even tiltul at all." Anyone remember?
Pulling the radish.
Mm-hmm. Remember, we had this whole theory about how it just falls off on its own, and it's so loose, it's like you're not even moving it. It's not that you took it and by force you shook it, but just. It fell off on its own. It was so light and so airy. It just fell off. So says Rabbeinu Yonah, the same thing is happening here. Ein kan kamo paga v'charara upugla shu metaltalan biyado v'agavan metaltalan davar aser. They just like fell off. The aser item just fell off. It wasn't, you weren't even moving it. Aval bekash eino metaltal ela begufo kila achar yad. Begufo kala acharyad. This is a huge, what we would call a huge ukimta, a huge shift in understanding all of these cases. Kala acharyad is not just indirect. Kala acharyad is abnormal. Indirect would be, you know, you're pushing it with your elbow. Abnormal is like you're pushing it with your head. So he says, begufo, when it says in the Mishnah that you're moving it with your body, Kilacharyag hilkach af al gav, even though dilakash shehu muktza hutzarech, even though the thing that you're using, the thing that you're doing this for, is the straw. You really are doing it for the straw. Midam alei letiltul min hatzad shehu tzorech ledavar hamutter. It is tantamount to a tzorech hamutter in its severity. Right? So even though, and this is sort of just fascinating, the way that the Rabbeinu, even though it falls into this category, the way you're moving it makes us treat it like it's in this category.
It's so abnormal.
It's so out of the realm that we'll be lenient for that one too. So in the end of the day, really, if I had the marker here, I would write it down. That in the end of the day, according to Rabbeinu Yonah's understanding of Tosfos, it's not just that these are cases of letzorach davar mutter. It's also letzorach davar ha'aser b'kilacharya. Right? Those are the cases where they're okay to be used. The only kind of tiltum in atzah, which is a problem, is regular indirect movement. Normal indirect movement, but abnormal indirect movement, even the tzarat davar aser, would be mutter.
So you could move the dead body with some kind of, I don't know.
I don't know how you would do that, but yeah. So that really is sort of the big question also. What is kalachariyad, what's not kalachariyad? So as we'll see in the poskim, so beyond just defining tiltum and atzad, what is tiltum and atzad, or when are you allowed to do tiltum and atzad, we also have to define when is it not even tiltum and atzad, right, to fit this category of Rabbeinu Yonah. So really we have three categories, lahalacha, I think lahalacha we're going to come down, that according to, and again, keep in mind the original Gemara of the dead body, l'kulei alma, everyone believes tiltum and atzad is aser. Right, so the halacha is shaping up for us. Sometimes you need the Shulchan Aruch to tell us, and sometimes you can already see it taking form. The Gemara clearly says tiltum and atzad is aser, but it's mutter in two situations. Number one, if it's the tzarach davar mutter, according to Tosfos at least, and number two, if it's kila achar yad. That's not really a subcategory. It's like it's not even part of the category. It's something else entirely. All right, we'll hopefully see that Mirat Hashem next week. Next week.
Have a
board meeting next week? What's that? Membership meeting.
It's a membership.
Whatever, not board meeting, whatever you call it. Either way, we'll meet next time, whatever it is. General membership meeting, I think, is next week. Yeah, it's the spring, it's the middle of May. It's crazy. All right, till next time. Shkai.